back my experience goes, right here. You...
Government had protected some drug dealers.
As officers in the narcotic war, we saw the political choice made up close and personal.
One example, Levine said, was during the Nixon administration when he was about to bust a major source of heroin.
And I was stopped, sucked cold, because that source were our allies in the Vietnam War.
Levine said this was not an isolated incident, that it had happened many times in his 25-year career.
If it was a question of supporting people who supported our economic and political philosophies in other parts of the world, and they happened to be drug dealers, as most of them are, we supported them and we protected them. We protected them by looking the other way.
And the drug dealers had another ally in the war, money.
That it has a corrupting effect whose tentacles extend virtually everywhere.
What about the Massawi case?
Should go forward to the piece, the whole piece. This whole piece on informants. Just stop it for a second, Joe, and I'm going to run the whole piece on informants because it's important that you see this whole thing. That case that you saw, Bangkok, Thailand, we go to 1971, during the Vietnam War. I'm sent undercover again using an informant who is in jail. I was able to get an entree into heroin dealing in Bangkok, Thailand. These are the people, I know you've heard of the case. You're looking at the one of the few human beings who actually worked this case. Is heroin smuggling in the dead bodies of RGIs? This was the case. What happened in this case, what they would not say on the air, but it was in the book, Undercover. What happened in this case was CIA came in and said, you're going no further to me. There's no time. These were CIA assets. They happened to be smuggling heroin into the United States using the dead bodies of our GIs, but the case was protected because they were working for us in the Vietnam War. Now, probably the most important thing that I can leave you with, because this is your future you're about to see, is this piece on informers. If you can't hear it, it's really important you guys just come forward and listen to this, because... Go ahead. Run this thing, Joe. I'm sorry. This is the whole piece on informants.
Billy isn't very bright.
What is our responsibility? Hardly a week goes by that some television outfit isn't invited to come along on a drug bust. The drug bust in this house is one they just as soon forget. This retired farmer and his wife are just two of nobody knows how many Americans the government has to apologize to every year for treating them as the criminals they aren't and never were.
Imagine eight masked men, guns,
storming through the house. And I kept asking, what have we done wrong? I said, we don't hurt anybody.
Willie Sutton said he robbed banks because that's where the money was. If Willie was alive, he'd probably be working for the government, because that's where the money really is. Last year, various government agencies paid crooks somewhere between $40 million and infinity. We don't know how much, no one will say. It was paid to so-called criminal informants for information on drug dealers. The information has led to enormous busts and to horrifying mistakes in which innocents paid dearly. We can't give you numbers because, again, the government does not keep track of its disasters. The biggest disaster may be the war on drugs itself. Over a decade, $100 billion has been spent and more Americans are addicted than ever before. But you wouldn't believe it from watching television. Drug busts are television's meat and potatoes. Action guaranteed. And law enforcement, from county cops to the feds, bring us along to show one and all the taxpayers' money doing dangerous work. And most of all, they invite us in to record the results.
The biggest senior capture seen in 20 years.
Barely a week goes by without the record drug bust of the day. Week or century.
They need the numbers. They need the statistics. It's a business. In our country, it's a business now.
The agents are under pressure, career path pressure, to come up with bigger, more newsworthy cases.
And if they don't, somebody's in trouble.
Strange bedfellow. Eugene Iredale, a San Diego defense attorney, and Michael Levine. For 25 years, for four different agencies, America's top undercover cop. Both say the net result of the war on drugs is a bloated, corrupt bureaucracy, whose only measure of success is the big bust, the show.
The key to that show are criminal informants. They have the key. So it's a quid pro quo arrangement. You save our agency, you help us convince the American people that this drug war really works, and we'll get you off whatever charges we can.
Almost always paid informants. Paid sometimes enormous amounts. Interestingly enough, invariably paid in cash.
I would say that the career path for an informer, a criminal informer, is a lot more lucrative for that of an agent. Crime actually does pay.
Most exciting game in town.
Bill is not his real name. For 8 years, he was one of the government's favorite informants. Neither he nor his handlers will say how much he was paid. We do know it was plenty. For example, a $700,000 airplane like this one. A gift from the U.S. government. The Justice Department says during those years, as a pilot, he was also running one of the biggest cocaine rings in South Florida. He's in jail for that, facing possibly 10 life sentences.
Were you running drugs while you were working for the government? For profit, for yourself?
It's pretty difficult to infiltrate these operations and without associating or being involved with drug trafficking or drug traffickers.
Did the government know everything that was going on every step of the way?
No.
Bill says that it's on the record that agents gave him carte blanche to do whatever he wanted. Like many informants, he, rather than agents, often seemed to run cases.
If an informer is slick enough and knows how to play the system enough, he can cleverly manipulate these people around and get them to violate their own rules and regulations.
We just seem to benefit each other, myself and the government agents.
The benefits to the government were busts. The benefits to Bill, according to the government, were this house and a private airstrip in Florida, at least four airplanes, and a ranch in Montana. Not every snitch gets to be as rich as Bill, but they all share one common quality. They are pathological liars. 7 a.m. Northern California, last Thanksgiving weekend.
The information that we received was that there was a drug lab in the process of cooking narcotics.
An informant had tipped off the Stanislaus County Sheriff's Department about a drug lab operating from this remote farmhouse.
There supposedly was a biker type described as tiny, 6'5", 280 pounds.
Armed with a search warrant and ready for battle, the SWAT team moved in. Inside the house, Bill and Marion Hosselman were getting ready for breakfast.
I looked out the bathroom window and I seen these two pickup trucks parked across the street from our home. And then, I walked to the front door. And I seen these burly shadows standing there.
The SWAT team identified itself and demanded he open the door.
I says, I'm not letting you in. I don't know if you're telling me the truth. I don't know who you are. You could be robbing me. I says, I won't let you in. So I asked my wife, call 911.
Before she could get to the phone, the SWAT team battered down the door.
Can you imagine 8 masked men, guns, just getting hold of both of you and one taking him one direction, one taking me the other direction.
And then one of them put his hand across my face. The other one knocked my feet out from under me, and I fell to the floor. And they were storming through the house. And I kept asking, what have we done wrong? I said, we don't hurt anybody.
For an hour, the Hosselmans were kept on the floor at gunpoint, their hands cuffed behind their backs. They listened as the SWAT team searched their house.
All I could hear these people say on their little radios that they have attached to them was negative, 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 negative.
One group of guys had you inside. There's another group came out here.
And I thought to myself, are they going to break another door down? So this is the door that they battered in. And you can see...
Well, they sure did a job on this one.
They did an excellent job. And my grandson...
An excellent search, maybe, but the SWAT team found no drugs, no drug lab, no six-foot-five biker. Just a set of toy trains and a terrified retired couple. 5 days later, they were still trying to overcome the trauma. And 5 days later, the sheriff's department was still red-faced. Undersheriff Carshaw had the unhappy task of trying to explain why the informant was believed.
Well, specifically what he corroborated was, of course, the description and location of the house. The fact that there was a motorhome behind the house that couldn't be seen from the road. He described the dog that was at the house.
This is the vicious killer dog you were supposed to have.
Yes.
This dog and two Rottweilers. I never heard of a Rottweiler.
The Hosselmans also have no idea who the informant might be, and the sheriff's department will not tell it.
What's your best guess in hindsight that he concocted the whole tale?
Yes.
I just hate to think what would have happened if the couple had been more panicked and went and reached for a gun.
I agree with you. I hate to think of that.
I was treated like a criminal for almost 2 days after this happened. In the emergency room, I can remember hearing conversation around me, and I remember somebody saying he was involved in a drug bust.
Don Carlson is the ultimate straight arrow. He almost did not survive his encounter with a federal drug task force last August. As an executive of Anacomp, a Fortune 500 company, he'd gone from work to dinner, then to his home in Poway in suburban San Diego. Federal agents watched him arrive. There on an informant's tip that several hundred kilos of cocaine was stashed in the garage, protected by four armed guards. Around midnight, Carlson was asleep. The next thing he heard was his door being battered in.
I stood at the extreme end of that hallway and hollered as loud as I could, who's there?
Who did you think was up there?
I thought they were robbers, burglars. I thought my life was in danger.
And still no identification?
Nobody ever communicated with me that evening, period.
Carlson panicked, tried dialing 911, then went for his handgun. Returned to the hall, and a bomb went off. Something police call a distraction device.
And I fired twice at the front door.
Then what?
And then I'm almost immediately, I'm hitting this leg, and I returned.
He staggered back to his bedroom, dropped his gun, and collapsed. Twice more he was shot. As he lay bleeding on the floor, Carlson was handcuffed and shackled.
I thought I was in the middle of the worst nightmare I had ever experienced. And I do remember wondering what the hell this was. I did not know. I mean, I couldn't fathom it.
The feds were having their own nightmare. The same informant told them of another stash. So while one group of agents was breaking into Carlson's house,
another group was breaking into this house a few miles away, and they too came up empty. But the results were a lot less tragic. There was nobody home. In fact, the house was vacant. So far that night, the government was batting 0-2.
In some disarray, the agents picked up their informant, Ron Edmonds.
He said, somebody just got shot, and it's your fault. I said, hey, what? He said, somebody just got shot, and it's your fault. Somebody got to pay for it.
Ron spoke to a San Diego television station shortly after the raid. At the time, his identity was still protected by the government. The night of the raid, his government handler was not amused.
They claimed that I said at the office that I just picked that house randomly and told them to go in it. Oh, no, 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 no. There's a lot of things I might have said, scared as I was, but I don't think I necessarily said that like that.
It should have been clear by now that Ron was unreliable. But the very next day, agents confronted Tony and Michelle Jones. Ron had accused them of being major smugglers.
And at that point, I was just in what you might consider a complete state of shock.
Especially so because she herself is a deputy marshal whose husband had met Ron at a gym. The cops searched the house and found nothing. The third phony accusation in 24 hours. She says had the SWAT team moved in on her the way they did on Carlson, she would have reacted like the cop she is.
I would have come out cheating because nobody bangs into your house at 12 o'clock at night. You know, and especially when you're not involved in anything and you have no suspicion that anything's going on, if your door's being knocked in, you know, you protect yourself.
The Joneses were furious. Don Carlson was fighting for his life. The government was investigating itself and their man Ron. He was a small-time crook with a record a mile long and a small-time snitch for the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department in Tampa, Florida. When he moved to San Diego, he went big time as a federal informant. He said he knew all about a major cocaine cartel. They believed him and paid him.
I don't mean to be cynical, but I have a prediction for you. What they're going to do is they're going to indict this informant, and they're going to try to lay it all at the door of the informant. They're going to accuse him of doing everything wrong.
Right. 2 months later, William Braniff, the U.S. attorney, made a statement.
Today, a federal grand jury indicted Ronald B. Edmonds on 25 counts of making false statements in a matter within the jurisdiction of the government. As is clear from the indictment, it is the position of the government that the entire cocaine conspiracy relayed by the defendant was false.
It's clear from the search warrant and other documents that the government did virtually nothing. Almost no investigation to corroborate Ron's claim. They substituted one dubious man's word for old-fashioned police work. That blunder will scar Don Carlson for the rest of his life. He will have only limited use of his right arm and leg. His lungs have not returned to normal. He is, of course, suing the government.
You must be a terribly bitter man.
Morley, I am not bitter. Early on in the hospital, when I was struggling for my life, I told myself that I would not become bitter over this, when what I needed to do was work towards getting my health back and getting out and getting my life back together.
At the same time, I'm sorry about that
for a second.
Sure.
Yes.
And Ron Edmonds, the informant, well, he's been on the run since the end of January when the grand jury indicted him.
Now, I helped 60 Minutes produce this. I was also hired by Mr. Carlson's attorneys to review what the government did and write what they call an expert witness report. I did this for the Justice Department. I was trained to do this, to review what police officers and agents, how they handle informants. And I'm going to tell you what I found that was not put on 60 Minutes. I found Ron Edmonds told a multi-task force. When we talk about task force, we're talking about DEA, Customs, the San Diego Police Department, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, Immigrations, and they had a brand new SWAT team, by the way, that they had just trained. And let me tell you, they're training like crazy now for the Patriot Law. Like absolutely crazy. These guys who set up and sell special military equipment to police agencies are doing the biggest business of their life. The stock market's going down, but the armament of police agencies in this country is going way up. Now, what I found was, and I read their own reports, that Ron Edmonds, who could speak no Spanish at all, no Spanish, convinced these federal agents that he had been accepted by the Medellin cartel. And I'm talking about teams of 30, 40 agents. And he then went on the payroll. Why? Because he said, I can give you a big case. A big case means headlines. headlines are now more important than ever. I submit the Jose Padilla case, the Jose the terrorist case, which they're now backing off from. Then now nobody wants to say a thing about it because it's bullshit. And the fact of the matter is, the New York Times Sunday before last put it out and said the FBI thwarted a terrorist act. Now, how does that translate? More money, your adulation. And, you know, the sad thing about it is, just you guys hear this. How many people read the New York Times? This is what you're up against. The New York Times is pushing for more police powers by putting this bullshit out. And I look at this audience, and I promise you, a lot of you guys are facing big problems. You know why? Because you look different. You are no longer the mold. You are, do you look like guys who would vote for the Patriot Act? You guys are in trouble. So that's why I agreed to come out here and talk to you guys. Well, anyway, the bottom line with Carlson, I know you're just dying to hear what they left out, was I reviewed these reports and found that these guys didn't do a thing to corroborate him. They kept him on a payroll. He came in and he made allegations, not against just the people you saw. He made allegations against 40 or 50 people, all of which were duly put into the computer. And it's probably still in there. Do you guys know what the NATIS system is? Any of you? In the NATIS system, which means that probably to this moment, when you're investigated or your name, if Ron Edmonds made your name up and it's in the computer, you now have a reputation for drug trafficking on the basis of him. Nobody takes this shit out of the computers. This system doesn't work that way. You're in. You don't understand the power of what's being done to you, do you? Well, I read, I hope you do after today, I reviewed 5,000 pages of reports. What I found was there was no such thing as a United States Constitution to these officers. There was no such thing. They took the man's word for it. They went to court, wrote down that he's a previously reliable informant, when in fact he was no such thing. The agent who was running the whole operation, the DEA agent, said, this is bullshit. We don't believe this guy. We threw him out of the office. So the informer, being smart, knowing the system, knows that there's competition for headlines. There's more competition now than ever before. But he knew then, this is just the drug war. This isn't the Patriot War. This is the drug war. He knew that if DEA threw him out, he could go to the FBI. He knew he could go to Customs. He knew he could go anywhere. And now, here's what happens. Where Congress said, CIA and FBI, you've got to get along. What that set up is, informers, if you don't want to take me FBI, I'll go to CIA. And one isn't going to insult the other. And that's what happened here. Ron Edmonds was thrown out of the DEA office because they said, you're a liar. He went over to Customs, and the Customs guy said, I believe him. The DEA boss, who wanted to get along with Customs because he can't afford the publicity of the two agencies fighting each other like they do every day, said, you go with Customs, let Customs run it. So all of these DEA guys who know the guy is a liar went along with it. Went along with perjury. The night before they put on that paper, the warrant, that he is a previously reliable informant, the agent running the case and his wife, who was the chief of the criminal division in San Diego, discussed whether they should polygraph the guy and decided not to. Do you understand the difference? If you're thinking in one moment, maybe we should polygraph the guy, and then you decide, no, let's just call him on a court paper that gives you the right to break into a house with machine guns, which is what they did. And the actual case that happened was one of the agents, a DEA agent who had just come back from the jungles of Bolivia, crashed through the door, did a combat roll, and emptied a machine gun and hit everything in the room but Mr. Carlson. That's what you call a no-knock warrant. Bottom line is, my report said that these people should, had I been doing this report for the Justice Department, as I did, I'm trained to do this, Had I been doing this for the Justice Department as an inspector of operations, I would recommend that these people be indicted from the U.S. attorney on down. That U.S. attorney is now a judge. She is now a judge. The agent was steadily promoted ever since. Because I'll tell you what happened. The U.S. attorney, Berenson, his name is, he was a Clinton appointee. There's no difference. You know, Republicrats, whatever you want to call it, there's no difference. And a Clinton appointee went up in front of the cameras and he said, the agents did their job. The system failed. And most of you guys believe that shit. That's why I'm here. You believe that, don't you? The system failed. What does that mean? The system failed. They gave Mr. Carlson $2.7 million. They classified my reports. I recommended indictment, perjury. They classified my reports. That's the untold story of what you just saw. No. They don't use national security. A federal judge, all he has to do is a court-ordered secrecy. That's it. It's over. And when they have U.S. attorney, they have the power to classify. You can't classify top secret. Top secret has to be national security. But you can classify up to secret without it being national security. And who in the press is going to go after this? Who? You think the New York Times will? You think William Sapphire will? You think Larry King Live or Geraldo is going to do anything? WBAI. That's all. What can we do? Well, okay, I'll tell you what, right now, what you could do. I brought with me CDs. Now, one of them I'm going to tell you about. Because it's the only place you're ever going to hear this. 1993. 7 months before the World Trade Center was blown up the first time. The FBI had an informant. His name was Imad Salim. He was an Egyptian policeman. He had infiltrated the group that was planning the bombing 7 months later. Now, for some reason, the FBI boss didn't like the girl, female agent, who was handling Salim. So he assigns an FBI agent to basically fire this guy. But what this guy didn't know, and if you took informant handling human intelligence 101, you would know, is you don't talk on the phone. So this informant immediately outsmarts the FBI agent. And he tape records this phone call. And on the phone call, you will hear the informant say, we're already planning the bomb. This is World Trade Center 1. We're already planning the bomb. You fire me for $500 a week, they're going to blow it up. And all these people are going to be gone and you won't know where they are. And that's what happened. But you don't know that. The only way you know it is from me. There's no excuse for you not knowing it, except that mainstream media would not put the story out. It's that devastating. And what happened on the FBI files, on news and stories, and they are now in history books as having thwarted additional plots by solving the World Trade Center bombing. How did they solve it? The guy they fired for $500 a week, they went and found him and paid him $1.5 million to help them solve what they could have stopped. Do you understand? And you don't know it. You, instead, the consensus in Congress and the media is that this plot to blow up the World Trade Center was so clever, so secret, so hard to penetrate, that they couldn't do it. We need more power. We need a Patriot Act. But the fact is, when you hear this CD, they had the whole case like on a CD-ROM. I mean, the Three Stooges would have done it better. Boop, boop, let's get it. I mean, the guy was planning the bombing. And they fired him. And if you're wondering why Rudy Giuliani was screaming that we're going to make a law that the FBI has to now tell the NYPD, because they didn't even tell the NYPD. And oddly enough, and you'll hear that on the tape, the informer went into a hospital with his ears ringing. The day of the bombing, the blast. And the informant says some enigmatic things that our Congress should, you'll hear it yourself. The informant says things like, they're planning the bombing. The informant was helping to direct the bomb. Do you understand? And that's what informers do. They create crimes. But that's the secret that we will never know. And that may be, by the way, the secret to the McVeigh case. Because I've studied the McVeigh case. I've done show after show. You can hear it on this website with experts. And the fact is, McVeigh was dealing with an informer a day. They had to know it was going to be done. And they botched it up like they did the World Trade Center. But then this goes further. What reveals on this tape, one tape, recorded voices, is that it's the same people who did it the first time who did it the second time. In 1995, they found Ramzi Youssef in Manila, by the way, with the help of the man they fired. He's the guy who planted the bomb. What you're not told is Ramzi Youssef was trained by Central Intelligence in the Afghan War to bomb. So here you have the FBI's informer helping them catch a CIA asset who planted the bomb. But the amazing thing you will hear on this one CD is Bob Blitzer, the head of anti-terrorism for the FBI, is confronted with this. And what he says is, yeah, Ramzi Youssef did have plans to hijack planes and use them as vessels on his hard drive when it was seized in 1995. And here's what this man said. But he was just one guy. You can hear it yourself. So what can you do? You'll support the show by getting this CD. But what you'll also be able to do is make copies of as many tapes as you can and send them as far and wide as you can. That's something to do. There's nothing else. What you'll hear is you'll hear on the tape. I did a show with Christina Borgeson, who was 19 years mainstream media. You'll hear her say, "You don't need a Patriot Act." That's the point. He said, "These guys had it. What is a Patriot Act?" We went off on a couple of congressmen who said we should have had a Patriot Act in back then, and we play the tape and we comment on it right there, and we say, "Look, I'm a professional. I used to do this for the Justice Department. A Patriot Act wouldn't have helped these guys." They had the gloves off all this time. There's nothing. This Patriot Act is just taking away, just taking this Constitution and shredding it. And the only way you can do it, I think, is by counteracting it with education. And if you want to know where their thinking is about informants, an informant said of Jose Padilla, they are more frantic now than ever to justify. That's to you, to Congress, so that Congress will say, hey, if we give you guys, this is what goes on. I've been there. The talk is, I want to support you guys, but you've got to give me something. The drug war has survived to this day because of a shill media, completely fraudulent, phony drug war. We've spent $1 trillion on the drug war to this day. We've got absolutely nothing. I'm looking for one guy who could say, yeah, Mike Levine, America saved me. Not one. $1 trillion and you can't find one. How do you guys take this? The only reason it exists, again, go on the website. You'll see the piece. Mainstream media, the drug war shills. Well, now it's happening again. Only now I think a page in history is about to turn that we're not going to be able to turn back. I think we're about to go too far. And those of you who want to get this CD, I urge you to get it. Hey, John Stitt, he's sitting there with whatever CDs are left. Stand up, John. I mean, he's very shy. I arrested him in 1975. Because we're going to be gone soon, I would urge you, you know, that's something to do, and you'd be supporting the show. And having said that, I think I'm almost out of time, but I got about 10 or 15 minutes for questions. Do you guys want to, any questions? Come on. Yeah, go ahead, my friend. Call it out. I'm going to repeat it. Two questions. Waco, again, go on the website. I did 10 shows on Waco. Waco was a murder. assassination. In fact, I had the people who did the movie that was nominated. I had them on my show three times to put their research on. Waco was an out-and-out murder. It was a media-planned extravaganza that was run by bureaucrats who have never, just don't know how to do the job. They put people out who are professionals. Again, you're running a system where professionals who know better, because they're trained, like I try to go back and tell you that, and their experience is such that you don't turn against the bureaucracy no matter what. You're in this. The bureaucracy loves you. The bureaucracy will take care of you. You'd be loyal to the bureaucracy, not to you guys. Not to you guys, because there's no reward for being loyal to you guys. And that's what happened in Waco. In fact, I have friends. I served in ATF, and I had friends who wanted to come on the show and talk, but not about Waco. But I got a few people to come on and talk about it. You got to go on the archives and see it. Oh, the military? Yeah, same thing. But military's worse. These guys, yeah, it's just, it's worse in the sense that you don't talk. You don't hear military guys coming forward at all. Yes, sir. Okay, let me get that first. FBI, CIA share intelligence. Absolute BS. Can't work. I was part of something like that. And the idea is we are now at a time where you got to take it out of the hands of people who have been at war for 50 years or 40 years. You can't. I was with the hard narcotic smuggling group of Customs when the Drug Enforcement Administration was created to stop the war between Customs and DEA. Day one, it was a multi-gazillion dollar move to create DEA to stop the war between the two agencies, to share intelligence, to work together. Day one, as a DEA agent, I go out, because I speak Spanish, they sent me out to get to interview a Colombian smuggler. And when I get out there, my old cohorts in Customs said, Mike, you're no longer with Customs. You can't cross this line. Same thing is going on right now. I get it from the inside. There is absolute BS. Absolutely. They're going to ignore it, and you're going to be told different.
All right, the second thing is, with all due respect to you, aren't you kind of contradicting yourself, for example, on the 60 Minutes piece, about how informants are pathological liars and the negative of informants.
Yeah.
But then you tell us on this TV that you have informants telling us about the crimes before they happen.
That's not what the CD. What the CD has is the informant tape recording the FBI agent. He speaks for itself. I teach. It's a great question. And I'm going to explain to you what happens. You need informers. There's no doubt about it. But what you need are professionals who corroborate informers. The KGB had a wonderful expression, and it was trust but verify. What we have are a bunch of college boys. Fraternity boys, one ex CIA asset described them as fraternity boys with guns and no honor. But they don't have, if you have people who really have no training, no expertise, no talent in that area, and you put them out with a gun, badge, and an informant, you're going to get Carlson cases. So it's a tough, one of the things I've said over and over on the show is there are certain people who can handle informers. Human intelligence. They have that magic. No amount of money can train you to do it. No amount of power can train you to do it. You might be able to. You might be a guy who sits down and you can do it. I don't know. I'd have to see you work. That's what we have to find to put in, you know, put that in their hands. There is no way of getting away from the informant system. But what it has to be is in the hands of professionals who are rewarded for doing, protecting us, not jamming it to us. I hope that...
Yes,
okay. Yes, sir.
Mike, have you ever met John Stockwell?
Yes, I have.
You never had him on the show.
I don't recall whether I tried to get him on the show or not. He and I appeared together on a couple of things years ago. Yeah. Yeah, Joe.
Could you shed any light on the Sudan?
Sudanese offer? No, I can't. I can't. Yes? Say that? My report's on the... Which report? The one on I'm going to put it up on my website. I'm going to put it up on my website.
There's been a lot of recent talks about major cartel dealing, including high-end technology. How does that apply to us, sex, and in your line of work, which is mass intelligence?
High-tech? I'm not a techie, but I always worked around. I mean, I've done cases where, and this is in the early days of computers, where international drug operation, one run by a guy by the name of Harold Baugh, the entire thing was computerized. He had everything on computer. And we were able to penetrate it with human intelligence, informers and undercover agents. And so, you know, the bottom line is, if you can combine the two, I have a thing called CENTAC that I do, and I've got guys who work with me on select cases, as top computer guys, top human intelligence, undercovers, and we put them together for commercial work. But you can't take away one without the other. You need the techie, you also need the good undercover, you also need the good human intelligence, you need it all. Yes, sir. Yeah, oddly enough, I teach at the Ontario Police College. I teach to this day at the Ontario. And every now and then CSPIS comes, they send guys in to monitor my class. I have to tell you, that what he's talking about, are you Canadian? Okay, he's talking about the Canadian CIA. Now I'm going to give you an odd thing. I was teaching undercover survival and informant handling at the Ontario Police College. Unbeknownst to me, there were men from the CIA, the Canadian CIA, monitoring my class. And the following happened. Do you remember when CIA bombed the Chinese embassy? Okay. Everybody, most of these listeners and most people are so sold on this agency having these devious, sneaky, Machiavellian plots that they all were looking for some logical reason, you know, some secret reason that the CIA would have for bombing the Chinese. And one guy said to me, Mike, CIA was bitch-slapping the Chinese. I mean, I said, you know, my work is really cut out for me. Bitch-slapping a nation with a couple of hundred million army, nuclear strike force, bitch-slapping them, whoa. If it's true that they were bitch-slapping the Chinese, then we got to take away their bitch-slapper for good. Because they're going to... So, here, I get a source, one of my people who call me because I'm cheaper than a psychiatrist. I'll go on the air with it. Calls me and says, this is what happened. CIA had an informer in Kosovo. Only thing is, he was a double agent. He was really working for the Serbs. And he came in to his CIA handler, and he gave him a coordinate to hit. He said, you hit that coordinate, and you're going to kill a bunch of Serb military. And it worked. They killed a bunch of Serb military. Now he came back again, maybe did it two times. The third time he did it, this is such an elementary trick. The third time he said, you're going to have to hit right away, or you're going to lose the opportunity of killing, and there were a couple of top officials. And the CIA shot their gun, and the coordinates were the Chinese embassy. Now, I say, you sure? He says, Mike, that's the gospel truth. So I'm in Canada, and I'm telling the story to policemen. Because I was teaching informant handling. And I said, I can't verify it. Now, at the end, one of the guys from CSPIS comes up, and he tells me, introduces himself. And he said, I have a question for you. How did you know that? That's supposed to be top secret. He was there. CSPIS was over there in Kosovo. And are they like CIA? Apparently they work close enough. Yes, sir.
whole stuff with this. You're talking about putting a report up on your website. I'm broke, but he's commercially advertised.
Well,
and seeing very confident.
Oh, I'm not. I'm scared. I'm not confident at all. Believe me, I'm not. I sometimes joke on the show and say, you know, I have one eye on the door expecting, you know, a task force to come in and take me out for violation of the Patriot Act. I don't know what the violation would be. I have no idea, but the law is now so nebulous and all-encompassing that I suppose I'm going to be vulnerable. So here's the point. When I wrote I got to wrap it up. When I wrote Deep Cover was the inside, was supposed to be a memo. I wrote a memo to the Justice Department saying, Edwin Meese blew the cover of this operation. All of these things happened. CIA killed this operation in all these countries. And I was told this is never going to see the light of day. And so I said, I'm writing a book. Now, a lot of secret stuff is in Deep Cover. But it was never written to be a book. It was backed up by recorded conversations, reports. I'm very good at that. And that's what the book is. You say, well, how do you do that? How do you get away with that? Now I'm going to cut to the Phil Donahue show was the first time I ever came on TV. I'm sitting in the green room, and I was, you know, selling Deep Cover. And the phone, it said, Mike Levine, it's a call for you. Who the hell knew I was there? It was a guy in DEA headquarters. And he said the following. Mike, I'm sitting here, and there are 10 lawyers with your book right now going page by page looking for any reason to indict you. And I said, if you're trying to scare the shit out of me, you've succeeded beyond your wildest imagination. But there was no turning back for me. I'm not the bravest guy in the world. Believe me, I'm frightened. I don't know. Haven't you ever gotten into a fight in your life when you were scared stiff and there was no other way out? Only way out is through. That's what I seem to have inherited in this life. There is no way out. It's not this great here I am. It's my lot in life. So on the Donahue show, one of the questions came up, am I giving it away, secrets? And I said, look, this is what I think saved my life. I said, I took two oaths. One to defend the Constitution, one to defend the secrets of the bureaucracy. I can't keep both. I chose to defend the Constitution. And I think I saved my life.
Thank you. Next
with that. Yeah, guys, I'm leaving. Thank you so much.
And if you like that, coming up next is the new FBI with more stories of excitement. We have a panel of several people coming up. A lot of people have been waiting for this panel. It's going to be excellent. And after that, be sure to head downstairs for more ravey insanity in the DJ room with mini DJ spinning. Get on the network. Play with old computers. We're going to start the next panel in about 2 minutes, so if you need to go to the restroom or go change the tape in your secret microphone that you've got taped to your chest, please do so. Thank you. Oh, it's all about you. Well, let's turn it to this guy. How about this? Dude, I can't upset a guy with a hat like that, dude. He's legit, man. Your microphone? All right. I actually said the name of the panel. The panel coming up is called the new FBI, not to be confused with the old FBI. The new friendly FBI. We're your partner keeping terrorism out of your house.
Can I get that video?
You have the videotape?
Yeah.
Ask the... I wish I knew the AV dude's name. It's like old home week here. Thank you.